Those of you who have children, just use your imagination with me for a moment, and imagine before your children were born, you got to sit in front of a video screen and watch scenes from your child's life flow across the screen before they happen, and you had the power to edit them out. You had the power to reach in and somehow edit the future of your child and keep certain things from happening. And so the screen flashes the scene of that long, long night that you spend with that little child up all night vomiting. And those of you with kids, you know how just heart-wrenching it is when your kids are sick like that. And then that next morning, you have to take him into the hospital because he's dehydrated. Would you like to just, a flip of a switch, eliminate that, keep your child from having to go through that? Or you go a little farther and very early in your child's career at school, he's diagnosed with a learning disability. And so reading, which comes pretty easily to other children, is going to be a constant struggle for your child. Would you, if you could, just flip the switch and eliminate that from your child's life? Or there's that time in your child's high school when there's that horrible breakup and she struggles with depression for a couple of months. Would you like to take that away? Or when he finally gets that letter from the college that he's just been dreaming of going to for years now, and it's a letter saying you didn't get in. Or what about that car accident where she loses her leg? I mean, those types of situations, let's be honest, if we could just edit out those kinds of excruciating moments and keep your kids from having to ever endure those kinds of things, that would be tempting, wouldn't it? I mean, that sounds good. We'd like to protect our children from those types of things. Well, we're beginning a new series this morning on the book of James, and it's an important series because all over the book of James, again and again and again, we have these instructions from James telling us to go one way when it makes sense to go another way. When our first response would be to go a different direction, James seems to be telling us over and over again, no, go the other way. Just how you're thinking, it's just do the opposite. It just seems backwards from what we would naturally assume. But James calls us again and again to do just the opposite of what we otherwise think we should. I know there was some challenge with a video. Is that ready to go or no? Okay, no problem. Bring up the first screen of the... Actually, Tim's running back there. Tim may save the day. We'll go with the... Just genius commercials, right? AT&T Wireless. And it's that simple concept that, of course, bigger is better. Everybody, it's not complicated. Of course, faster is better. It's not complicated. Of course, more is better than less. It's not complicated. It's just a genius commercial. It's self-evident. Of course, AT&T is the best. And James comes to us and says, now slow down. Wait a minute. It is complicated. Go the other direction. What you initially think is right and true isn't necessarily the case. And we see this over and over in the book of James. I'm part of a generation that wants to shield ourselves and shield our kids from every possible risk of harm. We're sometimes called helicopter parents. Maybe you've heard of them. Helicopter parents are parents that swoop into, you know, swoop into their children's lives, their educational lives, their relational lives, their sports lives, their church lives, and just swooping in to make sure that nobody's mistreating them, that everything is working out well, that there's nothing disappointing their kids. And we just want our kids to experience just one unending experience of unobstructed success throughout their lives. I mean, that's kind of characteristic of my generation. But James tells us, when troubles come your way, he doesn't say if troubles. He says when troubles. He doesn't say if, you know, on that off chance that maybe, believer, you've run into some rough patches in life. If that possibly ever happens, I want you to be ready for it. That's not what James says in the passage. He says whenever hardships come. And it's like he also knows that we have the attention span of a caffeinated chipmunk. So he says, I'm going to put this right up at the very beginning of my letter. So when you lose interest and don't really read through the rest of the letter, at least you get this. When trouble comes, you need to be ready. When trouble comes, be prepared. If you're a follower of Jesus Christ, you are going to experience all kinds of trouble. There's no indication. There is no indication in Scripture that if you become a follower of Jesus Christ, if you become, you make Jesus Lord and Savior, there is no indication that if you decide to follow this Jesus, follow this one that the Bible actually says was despised and rejected by man, a man of suffering, familiar with pain, like one from whom people hide their faces, despised. If you want to follow someone like that, along with, say, Peter, you know, who was crucified upside down. If you want to follow a Messiah like that, alongside of Paul, for instance, who, well, was stoned and shipwrecked and beaten and imprisoned. Do you get the point? If you're going to follow Jesus, think about who it is you're following. There is no indication that there should be, you know, my relational life, my financial life, my health life. Hey, as long as I'm following Jesus, it's always going to be perpetually up and to the right. There's nothing in the Bible to indicate that. So rather than doing our best to avoid hardships, and rather than doing our best to make sure our children avoid any kind of hardships, James instead insists, consider it pure joy when you face trials. Consider it pure joy when you face trials. You know how backwards that sounds? Of course you do. Because you're thinking that sounds backwards, right? Okay, we're in church, the Bible said it, so we're not supposed to think it sounds backwards. But let's admit it, it does. You know why it sounds so backwards? I think there's a number of reasons it sounds backwards to us, but I think the main reason is we're part of a secular society. Secular society teaches us you've got to get everything you can, you've got to get all of your happiness right now, because secular society says there's nothing else. There's nothing left. And so if anything goes wrong with your health right now, if anything goes wrong in your relationships right now, if anything goes wrong in your financial well-being right now, you're sunk because you don't get another chance. You only go around once. And that's why this seems so strange that James would say, consider it pure joy when things go south, when things go bad. That's why it seems so strange, because it comes from a different kind of worldview. Notice James is not telling us, he's not telling us to be happy all the time. we need to be clear on that, because sometimes Christians get into that mode of thinking, it doesn't matter what bad stuff happens, I got to keep that smile on my face, I got to be happy, I got to stay thinking positive and thinking positive, happy thoughts all the time. That's what it means to be a Christian. Can't frown, can't let anybody know that I'm hurting. We got to make this distinction. Happiness depends on circumstances. And happiness is kind of an automatic response to circumstances. You go into work tomorrow morning. Hey, you got a raise. You don't have to think about it. You're going to be happy about that. Oh, very cool. You go into work tomorrow morning and you got fired. James isn't saying, oh, just keep thinking positive, happy thoughts. Keep that smile on your face. Don't admit that it hurts, because it shouldn't hurt. You should be happy. That's not what James is saying. Notice James says, consider it pure joy. In other words, you have to make an intentional effort to think through something. You have to consider it pure joy. It doesn't just come automatically. That cute girl bats her eyelashes at you from across the classroom. It's automatic. It's going to be a good day, right? You're going to be happy. That same girl walks past you and whispers, loser. It's going to take some intentional effort to consider that pure joy. That's the way happiness works. Happiness depends on circumstances. Do you see the difference? If this afternoon, if I go home and Christy says, you know, here's a plate of bacon. Why don't you just sit on the couch and I'll rub your feet? I'm just throwing that out there. Maybe something to pray about. But I'm going to be happy. It's automatic. But James is saying, when you're in struggles, when bad things are happening, you need to make a conscious effort. Consider it pure joy. In other words, what he's saying is, think deeply, think carefully about the good things that may come through those circumstances. It's not going to be self-evident. It's not always going to be clear. But take the time to realize you're not alone in this, and God is working in this, and there will be good things coming through these circumstances. That's what James is saying. Consider it pure joy. It takes work. It's not going to happen just automatically. James is not saying, make sure you're happy all the time. Do you see the difference? So what is coming our way through these hard times? What should we be looking for? What do we expect? And James isn't saying, just be perpetually optimistic. Things are going to get better. Sometimes hear Christian leaders talk like this, that, you know, if you're going through struggle, rejoice, because victory is on your way and there's going to be a breakthrough, and God may be closing doors, but very soon there's going to be wonderful opportunities opening up, and that's why to rejoice. Just this morning, I saw this on Facebook. One of my friends posted this on Facebook. It says, God has seen you struggling with something, and God says, it's over. A blessing is coming your way. If you believe in God, send and post this message on, and please don't ignore it. You are being tested. God is going to fix two big things tonight in your favor. If you believe in God, drop everything and pass this on. Now, there's a number of things wrong with that kind of post. God is not waiting in heaven. Oh, please pass on that post so I can bless you. That's not the way God works. But just the mindset behind this. That's so often we think we just got to be perpetually optimistic. Things are going to get better. Things are going to change. Friends, God has never promised in this life that He will change things. What He has promised is He will change us. We cannot count on God to bring about different circumstances the circumstances we want, but we can and we must count on God to bring about changes in us as we go through those difficult circumstances. That's what's coming our way. That's what we can count on. That's what James is talking about in verse 4 when he talks about these trials that will develop perseverance. It will help us to continue to keep going in the midst of the struggling, in the midst of the trials. And that perseverance is going to bring about maturity and completeness. That's what James is talking about. When you're going through struggles, the circumstances may not change, but you will change. And God intends to use those circumstances to make you more like Jesus Christ. So I ask you a question. How many of you want to be more like Jesus Christ? Most of you. If your hand's not up, I wonder why you're here, but that's okay. You stay here. So, second question. How many of you want to go through struggles and trials? Not as many, but that's the same question. You see that? It's the same question in James's mind. That's how we become more like Jesus Christ, going through struggles, stuff that just rips our heart out, that we say, I don't want to go through this, but God uses them to make us more like Jesus Christ. You're not going to be a buff, ripped athlete like JJ, for instance, unless you work out hard and your muscles hurt, unless you do cardio hard until your lungs burn, unless you eat, you can't do it on a diet of cotton candy and Mountain Dew. And trust me, I've tried. It doesn't work. If you want to be buffed, ripped, powerful athlete, it's going to take some struggles. If you want to learn, if you want to expand your mind, stretch your mind, it's not going to happen just by a life of ease watching American Idol and playing Donkey Kong all day. That's not how it happens. We don't become like Jesus Christ without some struggles. Think through some examples. Humility, for instance. The Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians 12 says that in order to keep me from being conceited, in order to keep me from being puffed up, God gave me a thorn in the flesh. And I kept praying to God to take this thorn away, and finally God told me, my grace is sufficient for you. Think of what Paul is saying. Paul is saying, you know, I've got gifts, got skills. God has revealed to me just things that would blow your mind in terms of, you know, what he's revealed to me. And there is a real danger that unless God gave me something that would hurt, unless God would bring suffering into my life, I would become so arrogant, so puffed up, that I would be worthless. That kind of humility, it doesn't come unless there's suffering. Or think about compassion. Think about the sensitivity that Jesus had toward those who were suffering. And we want to have that kind of compassion. We want to have that kind of sensitivity. And friends, some of you know that you have gone through some really difficult, hard times. And it's only because of those real troubles that you've experienced you can understand people in ways that you never would have before. You never would have picked up on their pain. But because you've gone through that suffering, you're able to connect. You're able to minister with those people in ways that you never could have before. Or think about real faith. True biblical faith. You know, I sometimes hear, well, if God would bring this miraculous healing, oh, wouldn't that build people's faith? If God would just bring, you know, some supernatural intervention here and deliver me from this suffering, that would build my faith, that would build other people's faith. Think of it this way. This is from Tim Keller. He says, when suffering comes, it's always God coming to you and saying, are you going to bolt? Are you getting ready to turn on me? You know what this is showing? Suffering is showing us this. Did you get into Christianity to get God to serve you? Or did you get into Christianity to serve God? Which is it? Because if we say, you know, God, if you don't answer my prayer, I am done with you. I am out of here. Then it's clear. God, I'm the boss. You're the employee. And I'm getting ready to fire you. God, you're threatening my agenda. My agenda, that which I want, that's non-negotiable. God, it means there's an end. And you're the means to the end that I really want. You see where there's a lack of true faith being expressed here? You have faith in your own agenda. You know, you're not putting your faith in Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. That's why we can consider it pure joy when we go through struggles. Because we know that this kind of stuff doesn't surface. This kind of stuff doesn't happen in our lives. This kind of humility, this kind of compassion and sensitivity to the needs of others, this kind of real faith of just utter dependence on God, whatever you want for me, Lord, I'm yours. That doesn't come. That doesn't come without suffering. And now we come to the final couple of verses in the passage, verses 5 to 8. We've seen that if we allow God, He will use those testing experiences, He will use those struggles to shape us, and we will emerge more and more with the character of Jesus Christ. And that's so easy to say. That's so easy to say 2 years out from the cancer diagnosis. That's so easy to say 15 years after Robert, we discovered, was going to be born with a cleft lip and cleft palate, and it was pretty severe. I don't even know if some of you know this. I mean, it was like the foundations of our world just disappeared. We found that he was 20 weeks. Christy went into her first ultrasound. 20 weeks after conception. I mean, he is this long. He's as long as my hand is wide. And they discovered cleft lip and cleft palate. And it was pretty severe. Now, it's pretty easy to say 15 years later that God brings us through struggles and we come out on the other side and God has used those to shape and form us into the conformity of Jesus Christ. But it's pretty hard to say that when you're in the middle of it. And some of you are in the middle of it. Those kinds of struggles. It's not easy to look at our lives and have that kind of perspective. That perspective, it comes only from God. And so when we go through struggles, we desperately need the wisdom of God to be able to see our lives and glimpse our lives from God's perspective. So James says, pray. Pray. Pray to God for wisdom. It's okay to pray that God changes the circumstances as well, but if that's as far as we go, then we're missing out completely on what James is telling us. If that's all it's about is God changed the circumstances, changed my circumstances, we're missing what James has to tell us. James says, pray for wisdom. And God will give that wisdom. God will help you see what it is that God is working and changing in you. God will give you that perspective and the perseverance that you need to be able to come out on the other side. And we can pray with confidence because God gives generously. God isn't a stingy God. He's not calculating in his giving. So pray. Pray with confidence. Pray that God would work his will through you, trusting even in this hardship and being shaped into his likeness. You remember the story of Joseph in the Old Testament? It's a long story. One of the biggest chunks of the book of Genesis dealing with the life of Joseph. And you remember how he started out? He was kind of the golden boy. He was kind of a cocky kid, his favorite of his dad. He got all the good stuff, and he wasn't afraid to kind of talk about that in front of his brothers. Hey, I had a great dream the other night. You're all going to be bowing down to me. What do you think of that? That was Joseph's character. By the end of his life, he was a very different person. Now, if we're able to sit down with Joseph at the end of his life and say, Joseph, when did you grow most as a human being? I mean, you started off all cocky, you know. When did you kind of get over yourself? Joseph, when did you get that steel in your soul to be able to resist temptation like you did and trust God like you did? When did that happen? I think he'd probably say it was when I was a slave. When I was in prison. It's when I hit bottom. It's when I lost everything. That's where I met God. That's where he began to transform me. And I imagine Jacob, if Jacob could have been that helicopter dad and swoop in and rescue Joseph and keep all of these horrible things from happening to his son, and erased all of those tears and all of the pain from the script of Joseph's life, I think Jacob would have, so that Joseph would experience nothing but sunshine and prosperity and applause for the rest of his life, and Joseph would not have become the man of God that he did. But it takes wisdom. It takes wisdom to see that, to believe that. Frankly, it takes more wisdom than we have.